Your story is waiting for you today. Your story has something new to say. But your story will only come out to play when you're alone. Alone. Alone in a room with invisible people.
The following episode may contain swearing. Alone in a Room with Invisible People is brought to you by hollyswritingclasses.com. Hi, I'm Rebecca Gallardo. I'm the host of Alone in a Room with Invisible People. I'm here with author and teacher Holly Lyle, and today we have a Patreon question. This Patreon question was from Holly's Patreon, not the podcast Patreon, and it is, what if you had to do it all over again? But first, we want to go ahead and talk about what we did this week. So, Holly, take it away.
This was a big week for me. I finished the revision and the typesetting for The Owner's Tale and got that up live on all of my different places. It's on Amazon, of course, and then all of the places that Draft Digital sends to. And, oh God. Okay, what's the name? Smashwords. Okay.
Yes.
And it's also on Smashwords. And the other thing I did is I put together a 6-book series compilation. So it's one big volume with the entire, the Longview Chronicles is the title.
Oh, and I like that.
It's the whole thing. And at the very end of the book, I have this little thing that I have titled That Thing They Do in Movies, and it's just a special surprise for the folks who buy this version.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I am really, really happy with the way it turned out, and I'm also doing this, the big version, the 6-book in print. It's 656 pages, that's not in large print by any means. It's a big book.
Yeah, okay. See, and that's the one that I wanted to buy 3 copies of and do a giveaway. And
we can talk about that later. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then there were other things that I did this week. Just to let you know, if you want to know, I'm thinking about doing a really nice little early price thing on the Kindle version or on the ebook version, which will be everybody who gets the ebook version will be able to get a special price offer. So if you make sure you're on my science fiction readers list, I'll be sending out information on that fairly soon.
It's a special price for the print, you mean?
No, not a special. You can't mess with the price of print. Print is so expensive.
Price for the
ebook
Kindle
version.
Or the ebook
Yeah, the
version.
Ebook okay. version and any version that you get it in. Okay, and then I also finished Lesson 12. And I also, of course, did my Dead Man's Party chapter, and it's really gotten weird. I am so excited about this story. It's coming out of nowhere, and I can't wait for the next week to come along so I get to write the next chapter. It's so cool.
It kind of reminds me of the article you wrote on the Busman's Holiday, and I know we mentioned that last week.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. Yeah, I think we did. I don't know. At this point, the podcast episodes are just kind of going together because it's the holidays.
And we've done a lot of them.
Yeah. But, it seems like it's kind of a nice break from your nonfiction, but it's also a nice break from having done Settled Space for so long.
Yeah.
So, and then you're going to be moving into The Moon and Sun, which would be nice, but then you still have Dead Man's Party, which is this kind of adult weird thing that you're doing.
Yeah, it is just, you know, there is a genuine dead man walking around in it. And I had no idea. It's just the story is not inspired by the song Dead Man's Party by Oingo Boingo.
Yeah.
But that song was running through my head when I came up with the idea. And there are some strange little things that keep working into it. And the dead man was one of them.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my friend Melanie, she hadn't caught up on the podcast recently, so she had like a really long drive that she was taking. So she told me she was gonna catch up, and she said now she has Dead Man's Party stuck in her head.
Yeah, that song is wonderful. It is. I listen to it all the time.
It's perky.
Yeah, it's perky, but it's weird. Okay, so anyway, that was my week, and it was a pretty good week. So how about you?
I had a very good week, too, because I, like, on our habits, bad habits, the 16 bad habits that writers have, I walked away from the distractions. I turned, so originally I was going to write like 10,000 words a day. We talked about this for like 7 days. And I have done the 3-day novel many, many times. I have a lot of the stickers. I have the little paper they sent when their little foil thing saying you have survived the 3-day novel. And I have finished anywhere between like 40,000 and 60,000 words within the 3 days. And you're allowed to plot prehand, so that obviously helps. So it's not that it's not doable, and it's not that it's not fun, because I really enjoy those breaks. But the difference is the end of the year is so insanely busy, and I have so much crap that I need to get done. Plus, I have, you know, my own issues with the end of the year and not having kids. So I think that the 10K was writing to failure. And after we did that, the habits episode, I realized that. And I also realized that I had, I took my own advice with the limited willpower, the, what was the other thing? decision fatigue, mm-hmm. Your suggestions with the writing to failure, and also putting that writing as first. I always kind of fit it where it fit in best in the day. And it wasn't because it wasn't important, but it was because I wanted to give my focus to it. So I figured if I got these other things done first, I would have a clear head, I could sit down, and I could write. And I also wanted to keep Tony as a priority because I need to spend time with him. But considering it's the end of the year, we're about to go on a trip and everything, I just said, no, you know what, we'll get enough of each other on our 5-6 day trip, whatever. So I set the goal at 3,000 words a day, and mm-hmm. I've been consistently going over, but not like a huge amount over, only like, I don't know, 60, 100, 200 words, something like that. And I am at 17,000 plus words.
Awesome.
And yeah, I'm very, very happy. I realized I didn't give myself any days off, though, and I realized I needed them, because there's no way writing on Sunday with all of the podcast work that I have to do.
God, no. You guys do not understand how much work it takes her to get this podcast done after we have all of our little mistakes and stops and backups and cuts. And
there's a bunch of stuff that you have to edit out in this. And it's also that I'm slightly a perfectionist, and I actually wanted to go back and fix the last podcast. I think it was 2 episodes ago.
God.
Because there was a gap of silence in there.
Mm-hmm.
And but yeah, I try to remember that perfect doesn't finish thing. So every podcast, there's little things in it that I wish I could fix, but I just let it go. But yeah, so Sundays I'm not writing. This Saturday I didn't write because I had other shit I had to get done. And also I wanted to spend a little bit of time with Tony. So I'm trying to give myself 2 days off and writing 3,000 words a day. I should still finish it mid-December. And then there was something else this week, but I don't remember. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So the story, I took your advice and I left room in there to kind of let the plot evolve by itself.
Mm-hmm.
And what was really, really cool is my muse really liked that extra room, because she threw in another character. She added this kind of conflict
mm-hmm.
that I didn't see coming. She has taken different areas in the book and added them together to create a different conflict. So it's definitely leaving that little bit of extra room, leaving some of the cards blank, you mm-hmm. know, because I figured when I did Leaving Wanda Lucia, I finished at about 56,000, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to make it up to 70,000, and I created another subplot. So I figured, okay, worst case scenario, I'll just do that.
Right.
But now I don't know. It seems to be filling up pretty easily.
Yes, yes. Oh, I love that. Oh, and my God, I have been watching your challenge in the podcast.
Oh, the Write a Book With Me?
Yes, the Write a Book With Me. And people are getting their words and they're using the timer and they are discovering that 10 minutes is getting them stuff done. I am so excited watching that.
Well, the 10-minute timer challenge just started. Some of the people, I think they started a little bit earlier, mm-hmm. but it started December 1st. And for anybody who has who's interested in giving it a shot or not giving it a shot, but they already do it, they just don't do it consistently, or maybe you just want, you know, to hang out with other people in a forum and kind of proclaim, hey, I did my 10 minute timer. You know, we have a forum in there. And the idea really isn't to just do 10 minutes every single day, although if that's how you get your words in consistently and you make sure you write every day, set a 10 minute timer and just write. Mm-hmm. But if you are getting more time, if you have more time available in your schedule and you sit down and you want better focus and stuff, that is the idea behind the challenge, is to, instead of using your regular writing time as you do, it is to set the 10-minute timer for every 10 minutes that you have to write and just use it consistently and come in there and then let us know how you did.
Yeah. Well, yeah, The secret trick behind this is that it trains your muse to show up when it hears the ticking of the timer. And the whole Pavlov's dogs analogy, man, where you hear that timer start ticking and your muse goes, okay, I'm ready. And your fingers start moving and the story starts rolling out. My yeah. God, I love a 10-minute timer.
and see, I don't even hear anything, but when I set the timer, it's either on my phone or with the Alexa. I'll even say specifically, I'm like, Alexa, set 10-minute timer. And then as soon as she says 10-minute timer started, it's like, oh, I'm off. You mm-hmm. know? So it's really, really cool. And if you want to have some company, if you want to have something that's keeping you accountable to give this a shot and to really become consistent, that's what the forum is there for.
Yes, so, absolutely.
Anything else before we get onto the topic?
No, I think that's going to do it. This is...
So, yeah. Yeah.
This is a strange question because everything is different now than it was when I started writing. When I started writing, there was no indie publishing, or at least there was nothing indie publishing that was remotely respectable. The only way to get published was through magazines and commercial magazines and commercial publishers. And so I am going to address the question both with, well, you know, if I had to do it starting back when I was a kid, and with the realities of what publishing is now. And the first thing that I would do, and this is looking at today's commercial market, which is that you can indie publish and make millions. People do it. You can commercially publish. You can do a hybrid mix of the two. You can, you have all of these options. So if I were starting over again, the first thing I would do would be that I would submit every story to every commercial market that I respect first. Before I decided to indie publish, I would pursue commercial publishing with everything that I had in me, because until you have done that, it's hard to become visible. It's hard to be credible.
Just to make a note, Holly is saying that she would submit every story she wrote to places that fit
right
what she was writing. Not yeah. I mean, I know most listeners are going to understand that, but I just want to throw this out there. Don't submit everything every single where you can possibly think. Make sure your story fits.
That is a very, very fine point, and thank you for bringing that up, because yeah, there are only a few markets that I consider would be a good fit for my work, so I would submit to those markets. I would not submit to nonfiction publishers with my fiction, which I know people do this, and it drives editors nuts. Why are you submitting your novel to me? I only publish nonfiction.
Well, yeah, and it's the same thing with YA. If somebody's writing something that is maybe more of an adult thing, but they think it's kind of fun for kids, and they're submitting it to a YA or you know, like a teenage line. And it's the same thing with romance. And again, I have to go back to romance because it's what I know. And romance specifically, you know, there's a lot of little tiny details that make a difference. You can't submit something in a small town to something that fits everything else, every other parameter that is in your story. If it is in a small town and they are asking for big city stuff, don't submit it. It's not like, oh, well, they'll make an exception for me. No, they won't.
No, that's the lines are very, very specific. And you will not be the one exception who sells your brilliant linguistic science fiction to a fantasy-only publisher. You will not make them see the light. You will just make them reject you. And as someone who started out sending things to unsuitable places in my very earliest years of my career, I have to emphasize that this is and will always be a true thing.
So yeah, get back to...
Yeah, okay, so the next thing I would do was the thing that I didn't catch on initially to, which is I would revise and resubmit if I got a positive or semi-positive comment back from an editor. I would revise that story to that editor's comment and resubmit to that editor before... sending it to anybody else. It took me years to realize that these full-page letters I was getting from editors, that these full-page, single-spaced editors' letters to me were things I could have used to fix the story and send it back to that editor, who apparently thought I was close enough to be worth spending that kind of time on to write that letter. I did not get that, and that is something that if you get a personal response back from an editor, send your story back to that editor after you have done the very best job you can to fix it. Okay, the next thing I would do is I would revise and indie publish anything that did not sell commercially. And this is after I had exhausted my list of my chosen markets. This is not sending it everywhere until you are so old you don't care anymore. Okay. This is, you know, if you have a list of 5 commercial publishers that you want to hit, and you have submitted your story to all 5 of those and have gotten it rejected from every single one, then you revise it, you get in your group of beta readers, and you have them go over it, and you do the best you can to figure out how to make it good, and then you publish that sucker and you put it up and you write another story.
Okay, so you are saying have people look over it, have people make sure, because if you're consistently hearing something from all of these editors, from your beta readers, maybe you should listen to them. Because I know there's been a few people who can't get published, and there's a reason for mm-hmm. them not being able to get published.
Right, so you need... At the point where you are submitting and routinely and regularly and steadily submitting your work to commercial publishers and you are not selling anything, that is a sign that you still have a ways to go. I mean, you know, this is assuming that you have researched your markets and are sending it to places who might actually buy what you're writing. Yeah. That is first. That is, only send editors what they say they want. Never think you're going to convert them to your particular fiction religion because you are so brilliant. It's just not going to happen. But yes, if you have gotten a bunch of rejections, then yeah, you need to be putting your work in front of people who will tell you why, who can coherently read what you're doing and intelligently comment on it and do it in a non-hostile fashion, which is really big. An example of this would be my writers community, which is free. Not all parts of it. Some of it is for people who have purchased classes. There are private classrooms for those folks with a private forum. But the general forums are free. You have to create an account. They are private. Nobody can see what you write on the forum except other members. It is not searched by Google. It is not searched by any other search engine. It is private. And
yeah, and the people there are amazing. Oh, yeah. They're gentle, but they know what they're talking about, and they can kind of, they're really good at pointing out areas where you might have messed up too.
Right, right. Seriously, I have the best people on the internet on my forum.
Yeah.
So put your work in front of people who will be objective and kind and who are interested in helping you and in helping you get published. And that's my guys, okay? But that's, you don't, There is no badge that you get for doing this alone. And that's something that I did right when I was getting started, was we did a live writers meeting, and we got together twice a month and sat until like 3-4 o'clock in the morning, started at around 9-10 o'clock at night. And until 3-4 o'clock in the morning, we would read each other's work and comment and figure out what people were doing right and what they were doing wrong.
As dedication.
Yeah. Yeah, that it was. It was. That was, and we worked really, really hard for ourselves and for each other. And then after I was revising and indie publishing anything that did not sell commercially, I would build one big world in which to set all of my stories. And I would have everything that I could think of. I would write as many different kinds of stories in that world as I possibly could. But I would have all of my stuff connect to all of my other stuff. It was the thing that I was going to do with Our Hell, which was my very first commercially published world. Fire in the Mist, Bones of the Past, Mind of the Magic. I would do that. And you know, I would now have it in Settled Space because that's the one I have really, really fallen in love with. But I would not have my career scattered across,
so many worlds.
So many worlds. I don't know how many worlds. At least
but now,
six.
Are you saying that you would commercially publish or that you would write this as an indie thing?
I would do both. Because you are indie publishing your world first, that commercial publishers cannot claim your world, because if you already have your work out there in indie, the world is there, it is published, and they cannot refuse to let you create stories in your own world that you have already been creating. So you make a separate portion of that world for a commercial publisher. You do one continent or one little island or one moon, or depending on whether you're writing fantasy or science fiction or whatever. But owning your own world is a critical part of creating a writing career. Owning something that makes you recognizable to your readers and that gives them a reason to come back to you that is just yours. And by creating your own world, you do that. You are the only person who can write in your world. You have this unique thing that you have built that gives the people who love you a reason to love you.
And this is for all genres, too.
Oh, God, yes.
I just want to make a note, because like Wanda Lucia, that's its own little world. But I've also got four other cities around Wanda Lucia. Mm-hmm. There's that Jan Aron, I don't remember her name, but she wrote those books about that small town.
Mitford.
It was
Jan Karen. Jan Karen.
Jan Karen. Mm-hmm. I was close. Yeah. I said Jan Aron.
Yes, it's Karon. And she wrote Mitford, which is this tiny little town in the mountains of Western North Carolina. And they are Christian books, and I have read them and thoroughly enjoyed them in spite of being me. because she writes wonderful people and she writes these sweet little situations and this nice little town. And it felt very much like Jadane Nutton to me.
Yeah, but that's another example of a world. Yeah. And that one is just what, like, it's just a little homey kind of story, yeah, kind of like Gilmore Girls or something.
Right, exactly. It's like a population of 1,200 maybe or something, maybe even smaller than that. I'm not sure. I remember that it's small, and she does at some point in the book say the number. But it is a sweet little small town in a location, but it is a made-up small town. It is her small town. It is Mitford. Lawrence Block wrote in New York City, but it was his New York City. It had places that were based on real places, but they were his. You can create your own Paris, or your own Geneva, or your own San Francisco. And by creating your world with crossover elves or dragons in the mall or whatever it is you want to do, that you make it yours, then you own that. And owning that and publishing and only farming out pieces of it to commercial publishers and saving portions of it for yourself and having a couple of things published first with your stuff. If you want to use that as your world. I know you've got one world that you are using for commercial publishing and then one that you're going to do indie.
Yeah, Wanda Lucia mm-hmm. is commercial, although I'm going to have some smaller stories that I'm going to publish that are just kind of something else for readers to get and read through and kind of just something else to keep me in their mind, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Fulton Hills, Standing River... There's a couple other areas in that. Those are mine. I, because of growing up and seeing you have to, every three books, create a new freaking world, I am so hyper-obsessed with keeping Fulton Hills mine. I don't need to be some sort of rich and famous person. I don't want... Like, I don't need a whole bunch of money. I would just like to be able to pay my bills with, you know, I think a lot of people feel that way.
Yes.
I just want to be able to pay my bills with what I have and maybe put money into savings.
Yeah, without stress. To know that I'm okay. Yeah, I am the same way. I just want to know that I'm okay, that my people are okay. And that's it. That's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's my goal. And I feel like leaving Wanda Lucia or the Wanda Lucia world, that is something that is, you know, it's not as creative.
Well, you had to fit it within the parameters of the line that you were submitting it to.
Yes.
So, yes, you know.
It was created specifically for that line.
Mm-hmm.
And... Fulton Hills and Standing River, those were created just...
Right, out of all of your
over
loves.
Many, many, many years, and yes.
Yes, yes, out of everything that you love. And I am so excited to see those books, man.
Yes.
Okay, so anyway, the next thing that I would do, in spite of the fact that I had some fun with a few of them, is I would refuse to do collaborations. And I was
waiting for that one.
Yeah, well, I had a wonderful time working with Steve Sterling, and I got some good boost out of a book that I did with Mercedes Lackey. But there is this cheapening of your work and your reputation if you put your name on with somebody else. And here is how that works. The people who love the big name author's work are not reading for you. The people who would love your work are not reading for the big name author. And the collaboration that you are creating is not going to be either you or the big name author. It is going to be this blending of styles that is not going to satisfy either group of readers. They're going to say, well, you know, it's not bad, but that's not real Mercedes Lackey. Or that's not bad, but it's not real Holly Lyle. It is this blend. And yeah, for the big name author, it can be not a bad deal because they're doing very little work and getting most of the money. But if you're doing a regular collaboration between you and one other author, where you're both pretty much in the same spot, this is where Steve Sterling and I were back when we were doing The Rose Sea together. It didn't satisfy his military fiction people. It didn't satisfy my fantasy people. And we both worked twice as hard for half as much money as we would have otherwise gotten. So, you know, it was not a win-win for anybody.
You even had a collaboration where, I won't say the name or anything, but the other writer was actually unable to do anything.
Yeah, that was a nightmare situation. It really was. Those books are reverting back to me. I will be publishing them myself. Well, they have reverted at this point. Yeah. And they will be published just under my name. But yeah, that again is one where the name is not going to be mentioned, even here in the podcast. We just don't go there. Yeah. We had this agreement between agents and the way that we're handling that. So, okay. So then I would refuse collaborations. I just would not do them. The next thing is I would start when I was 15. I would begin writing fiction at the youngest possible age. If I had understood at all what writing was, I would have started way earlier. I would have learned how to type early so that it was not me writing my first novel while teaching myself to type with whited out keys on an upright typewriter. That was when I was 24, because that was really hard. It's easier to learn to type when you're younger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I would have learned Dvorak first. Although with an upright typewriter, I couldn't have. So I had to learn the way I did. I had to learn QWERTY.
Well, I mean, this is kind of a mix of if you had to do it as a kid then, and if you had to do it as a kid now.
Right.
So
right. If you are doing it now, learn to type Dvorak. And the reason I say this is that I was 10 years into my professional writing career wearing wrist splints, having agonizing wrist pain constantly.
Yeah, I had to open your Diet Coke a couple of times.
Yeah, I remember that. It was like, good God, it was horrible pain. And I searched the internet for wrist pain and found Dvorak keyboard, Dvorak. It is an alternative layout that you can just switch if you're using either a Microsoft computer or an Apple computer. You just switch the settings and instantly your computer, your keyboard, your regular keyboard goes to Dvorak. And it took me a month to learn it, and it was the most difficult month I spent. I felt like I had had a stroke and gone mute. I couldn't type anything on the internet. I couldn't talk to people online. I couldn't chat in IM back when IM was big because my fingers had gone mute. But at the end of that month, I could type Dvorak. And within a month after that, the wrist pain was gone. And by this, I mean gone permanently for good. I have never suffered wrist pain since. So Dvorak keyboard. You don't have to buy any special equipment for it. And if you want career longevity, this learning a new keyboard layout is the price you pay to stop the pain. And then the final thing I think is just that I would pursue what I love. And I would have started with science fiction, and I would have stayed with science fiction rather than starting with fantasy because I was told that fantasy was an easier break-in. And I guarantee you it was. It was easier back then to sell a fantasy novel than to sell a science fiction novel to a commercial publisher. But science fiction was the thing that brought me to the party. And I think you dance with the one you come with. And if I had realized how long I would have spent writing fantasy. And I like the novels that I wrote in fantasy, but I love my science fiction. And I love being able to step into the future and to step into settled space and to step into my bizarre version of faster than light travel and to see what people can become and what magnificent things we can create. And that's where I want to write. And I do other stuff because other stuff interests me, but settled space is home.
I love that. I kind of want to put something in here myself too. And I know this question was for Holly. It's not, you know, because she's the reason that this podcast exists and the reason that so many people have come together. But this is something that I know Holly absolutely 100% agrees with too. So I'm just going to put this out there. Your time on this planet is so, so very limited. Think about how quickly your life has gone by already. And I think that the thing that she said she would start when she was 15, I think a lot of people feel that way. Like I try to live without regrets, but if there was something I was going to do over again, it would be to not be so scared, to not procrastinate as much, to not start over on a new project as much, to not just sit there and think, well, this isn't good enough. You know, I don't regret my fan fiction years. I spent a lot of time on them and I have a lot of words in fan fiction, but I'm glad for those. Those, they taught me a lot, especially they taught me how hard it is and how wonderful it is to create your own work, because it gives you that depth, because you realize how easy it is to work in this. And then when you finally create something of your own, you feel a lot better. But that's besides the point. The whole idea is there's this thing that goes around every New Year's and stuff. It's about exercising. Start today. You know, and it talks about how, you know, in 5 years from now or in 5 months from now, whatever it is, it's like if you start today and stick with it, you won't regret it. But think about the last time you started. You know, when was the last time you started and quit? How much further along would you be now? So the same idea goes with writing and the same idea goes with submitting.
Start now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your life is so short. And it's not about what if I die tomorrow because I get hit by a bus, or what if I, you know, like Herman, you know, my grandfather, cancer out of nowhere and dead very quickly. So it's not just about that. You could live to 98, you could live to 110, you know, if you have wasted so many of those years, what was the point?
Yeah, you can be doing what you love right now.
Yeah. And I know it's scary and I know it's hard. I know it is one of the hardest things you will ever do, to finish something, to revise something, to submit something. But at least you would have tried. At least you can say, I accomplished this much, mm-hmm. You know? So look at today as your yesterday. What can you do today that will make a difference? Even if it's just in your mindset, you know, sit down, take 10 minutes and imagine yourself 5 years from now or 10 years from now, however long you want, even a single year from now, and just think, what can I do today to make a year from now better?
Yeah, to make that thing real.
Yeah.
Because you can do this.
So that was the episode that, you know, again, it was a Patreon question on Holly's Patreon. Thank you very much. Really think you created a valuable episode here. And again, you know, if you're interested in supporting Holly, Holly's writing, all that stuff, we don't really mention it that much because the podcast is, you know, just it's a free thing. It was here. But Holly does have a Patreon. It's, you know, just look up at patreon.com. That's P-A-T. reon.com. Just look up Holly Lyle. Her last name is Lisle. And you can join. She's got a couple of levels. She's got some really neat stuff. She shows people. She gives them the first draft of things. And if you're one of the top tier members, you get to see her actually right on screen, which is really, really neat. It's
it's weird.
It is very, very weird. And there are people that watch every time, and some people even write with her, which I think is geeky as hell and awesome. So it's pretty cool. All right. So yeah, so Holly has a Patreon. We too have a Patreon due to the requests from our listeners, and we really, really thank you guys for wanting to support us. If you want to, you know, be a part of our Patreon, right now we have no rewards, but we are working for those in 2019. Just look up Alone in a Room with Invisible People on patreon.com. If you prefer, we have one time, you know, the ability to give to the podcast one time. That is on alonewithinvisiblepeople.com. It is on the top right hand side. You'll see there's three different tiers to you know, support us there. We are still giving away ebooks for iTunes reviews. So Holly has a book called Squick Studies. It's set in settled space. I have a book called Good Bones. It's a shorter story, and it is a paranormal story. So, you know, if you leave us a iTunes review, just email at show@alonewithinvisiblepeople.com, and we will send you that. I know we already mentioned this, but Holly has forums for writers. They are free. And when you join, you get free access to the How to Write Flash Fiction That Doesn't Suck course, which is a 3-week course. It is really cool. It has taught me, you know, we have an episode on this. I'm not going to get into it, but our episode is Why Write Flash Fiction. So that could be really good for you. But yeah, the forums are amazing. You can find a lot of people that are in this just like you. So lastly, you can follow us on the socials. I know we're not doing much there, but it's at Twitter, and Instagram is at AIARWIP. And you can also search the hashtag Alone with Invisible People or Alone in a Room with Invisible People. And we are on Facebook, Alone in a Room with Invisible People. Thank you very much for being here and listening to this episode, Holly.
Thank you very much, and we will see you next time.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
You want to write, you love words, you love fiction, but you don't know where to start, or how to middle, or where to finish. I do. I'm Holly Lyle, and I've been doing this professionally since 1991. And I know how I did what I did to go pro, and I'll be happy to show you what I've learned. Start with my free 3-week flash fiction class at hollyswritingclasses.com.